Namaste and welcome. It's so good to see everyone here on one of our first days of spring. It's actually thawing out in here. We can have it without having to have the fireplace going. So it's good to see everyone that made it this week in spite of the nice weather. So we'll begin with what's in it. See what we've got in the satsang bowl today. Is there really evil in the world? You can say yes. You know, in a way, you can say yes, there's evil. But then again, you have to understand what evil is, okay? Every evil practice has some seed of truth in there somewhere. And what makes it evil is that it, you know, it becomes skewed. It becomes pulled away from the truth and the light that gives it meaning until it becomes unrecognizable and becomes evil. Okay. So it's like a shadow substance. People that are doing evil acts are doing so out of ignorance. You know, they're just so skewed. They may be looking for love. They may be looking for control. They may be looking for something. Okay. And they don't know, you know, how to reach inside, how to find that within themselves. So they try to control or try to dominate or try to find it through external ways and means. Some are, you know, driven. They're driven because their minds are unsettled. This is also what, you know, this path, what it's to do is to look at these areas where we feel driven. To find out what's underneath of that. Why we run our lives based on these illusions of truth or fallacies that we believe about ourselves. Or that we believe about the world. It's like someone that's, you know, comes from a house where they never feel safe and secure. They're always looking for the world to be also unsafe. Okay. And if your mindset is such, then that's what you're going to continue to find. Like these people that, you know, see... They see plots and they see, you know, conspiracies everywhere. And if you look for it, you're going to find more and more and more of the same. Like people that start going into paranoia. Something could be really innocuous, but they'll see some big dark evil there. Okay, they'll be in fear. This is some of the problem, you know, now, especially since 9/11 and all of these things, they keep trying to keep people in fear base. A lot of societies want to try to have people in fear base. You know, you're going to toe the line, you'll do it this way or else you're not accepted or, you know. So unfortunately, you know, it starts out in some type of a fear base, and then the further it goes, it becomes into evil. Okay? Doesn't mean that it can't be changed. It can be changed. Because even in the most evil person, the core center of that is that God essence, which is always pure, okay? So it doesn't mean they're without hope. They're always with hope that they can change. In the Buddhist tradition, they have one that was named, I think it was Milarepa, that was had been doing black magic, killed a number of people, had a lot of very bad karma. But he gained realization in one lifetime. All it took was stopping from that mindset and that, you know, to starting to come within and to question and to let go of that. So anyone can change. Anyone can find that inner kernel of truth, that, you know, that place within, which is always perfect, which is divine perfection. Okay. So yeah, evil is a shadow. But remember that the shadow never has more substance than the light. Okay. This is why karma is in place, because the absolute is inherently perfect as it is. So anything that's against that perfection will draw in its own condemnation or its own suffering. Okay? Doesn't mean that there's some God up there, wrathful God, that's going to make you suffer. You're creating your own suffering by your ignorance of chasing the shadow rather than letting go of the shadows and coming to that inner truth which is there. Okay? Did this help to answer the question?
Mm-hmm. Can I have a follow-up question?
Sure, of course.
So then there is not an inherent evil force such as the one in Catholicism. It's more...
No. Even that inherent evil force, which they call the devil.
Yes.
Okay. Who was he at first? He was the head of the angelic choir. He was not created evil. But instead of even being the head of worship and wanting to, you know, give that, continue in that, he wanted to have the glory for himself, became ego-based, went into separation, and fell, and became known as the devil. But no, it was not created an evil thing. There was nothing in creation that was created evil. It's a shadow. It's when ego arises. Same thing, the Garden of Eden, okay? What happened? They were created. They were perfect. They walked with God. They communed with God. Okay, they were innocent. Everything was wonderful. There was the Garden of Paradise. But what happened? They wanted to know good from evil. All they knew was good. They had no idea of what evil was. So they had no idea of what they had. They wanted to have knowledge of good versus evil. So the fall happened. So they could experience evil and therefore know what really was the good, really what they have. Okay. So when the fall took place, then people at that point went from having unlimited life into a more physical form that would come and go, so they were not trapped forever in that fall. Okay. So yes, when you've had enough of learning what this, really what you have and what you're not, then you can let go and you can go back to that divine presence, which is always there. Okay? So yeah, no, nothing was created as this big evil. Okay? So there's nothing to fear. This is why Christ had no fear. Fear of what? When you know the truth of what's there, there's really nothing to fear. Okay, yes?
Does the evil that exists, does that have something to do with teaching us lessons about, you know, negative, positive energy or attitudes or, you know, in order so that we can choose the good? And then does our free will, like, help us to preserve our dignity, or what's the difference between, you know, having free will and not having free will?
Everyone has free will. If there weren't any free will, how can Milarepa go from being this tantric guy and, you know, caught in this evil cycle, caught in this downward spiral, to gaining realization? Because you have free will. If somebody walks up and hands you drugs, you have free will. You can either take it or not. Okay? Even if someone's in prison, they have free will. The body can't go anywhere. But they can either choose to spend the time and go into meditation and be free that way, or they can sit there and remain in the suffering and think about how caught I am and it's unfair and why am I, you know. If you watch the video on Vipassana, they took Vipassana into the jails in India. Now they have it in jails here in the U.S. as well. But some guys came to the point of saying it was almost worth going to jail to find this freedom through Vipassana. Because actually, even in jail, they were more free than they were on the outside. Because they started to come within themselves and took responsibility for their actions and saw that the only one put them in the place they were at was themselves. It wasn't society, wasn't this, wasn't that. It was their own actions, and now they were reaping the karma from their own actions. So if you want to change what's going to happen in your destiny, change what's happening now. And so your whole karma changes. Okay? Yes, what you've done before is going to create what you experience now. But how you interact with that is free will. So if you want to change the future, change now. Let go of chasing the shadows. Because if you chase the shadows, you're going to keep manufacturing more of the same. If you're in depression, you need to start to be willing to let go of that mindset of chasing that, feeling sorry for yourself and poor me and poor this and I should have had this, I should have had that. Why me? Okay. So if you want to step out of that, it takes changing the mindset from looking at what you didn't have or what you think you should have had and having gratitude for what is here now. So people are in depression. That's one of the first things I'll give them. Okay, start a journal. Find three things you're grateful for today. It's a change. You start to change the mindset. And as the mindset starts to change, the chemistry of the body changes as well. Okay? So this is all linked together. This is quantum. Everything is created by energy. The consciousness moves this energy into specific patterns. You want the patterns to change the consciousness, change the awareness, change the mindset. Okay. This doesn't mean that I'm advocating affirmations. Because what you're doing when you're doing an affirmation is solidifying the opposite as well. You know? If you're saying this affirmation, then you're cognizing that I'm this inferior thing and that I need to have that affirmation. So unwittingly, what you're doing is also keeping that foundational bondage in place. Okay. So it's much better to go within and do some meditation and let go, allow the mind to still, to do some active meditations where you're involved in something, where we're, like here, we'll be doing the Falun Dafa as well. Or like last week, we sat and just enjoyed the cup of tea and got everything you could out of that experience without the mind running here and there. I wanted to do another exercise today, but I didn't have time to go out. I wanted to bring some flowers, different types of flowers. So since we didn't have time to get that today, do that this week yourself. Take a flower. Just sit and look at it. Feel it. Feel the energy of it, the color of it, the fragrance of it. Get everything you can from that experience. Simplicity. Very simple. Okay? It doesn't matter what you're doing, you can do the same thing. Driving, just feel the road, feel the car, feel how the motion is, you know. Get everything you can out of the experience at hand. And let go of the mental stuff of chasing, I shouldn't have, I wish I had, poor me, if only, what if, you know. All of this stuff that clouds. What is the inherent beauty in this moment? If you change your mindset, this moment can be sacred as it is. Any place is sacred as it is. It just takes a changing. Okay? So as you change the mindset, the awareness is going to change. Got another one? Can you talk about self-betrayal? Doing things to please others. Just because you do things to please others doesn't necessarily mean self-betrayal. Depends. Okay. One can serve society or serve others and do it as a seva. But if you're doing something just to make someone else happy, and if you're somehow doing it with an ulterior motive in the end, I have to do this because I have to please them because I want X, Y, or Z, then it's not being done freely and openly anyway. Whose question was this?
Mine. And can I be more specific?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have friends who get together regularly. Sometimes I am so tired, I just want to be alone. I don't want to go. Mm-hmm. But I feel a lot of pressure to go, like as in last night. And by the time I come home, I'm drained. Yeah. I regret that I went.
Yeah, there's no reason for you to have to go. You know? Yeah. No, stay home. Stay home. This is what I mean about, you know, being pressured by society or pressured by this do's and don'ts. There's no reason, you know. You haven't done something wrong because you stay home, you know. It's fine. Just stay there and enjoy. That's fine. Yes.
Now that you mention it, I realize I have an ulterior motive. I'm afraid they won't invite me next time.
Absolutely. So it comes out of fear. Yeah. Click good. Yeah, don't run your life based on fears. So if they don't invite you next time, okay. What have you really lost? If it's not that comfortable to begin with, then really, what are you losing? Oh, someone may not like me. Oh, well. Not everyone likes you. You know, not everyone liked even Christ. You know, you can't make everybody like you. You can't be all things to all people. And when you try, then you spread yourself so thin that there's no meat any longer, you know. Okay. So just, you know, try to live your life openly, honestly, transparently. Being honest with yourself, you know, being honest with yourself. Okay. Yeah, don't go out, you know, just to please someone else. It's because really, what kind of good company will you be anyway? You're really not wanting to be there. Don't be there. It's like, you know, this path, not everyone is going to go out and, after realization, be a guru. That's not everyone's path. Some will go more active into social things. If that's been their focus, then they'll go more into that. That's fine. Some may hide away and go live in a forest and just enjoy the nature and be there. That's fine. But there are no have-tos, you know, in this. The thing is to find out what is the basis of all life. It doesn't mean that you have to become more embroiled in societal do's and don'ts. See what are the societal do's and don'ts that are confining and becoming bondage. And then be willing to step out of that. Because we shouldn't run our lives based upon fear. Confront the fear. Be willing to step out of it. And you'll find that it's much more freeing. So next time, yeah, don't go. It'll be interesting to see how you feel after that. Yeah. Can one experience Kundalini awakening without experiencing kriyas, the physical expression of movement and shaking? Each is different in this. You can't say, well, I want to awaken it, but I don't want to have the kriyas. I want to do it without it. If you need it, it's going to happen. If you don't, maybe it won't. Okay? Some have very extreme kriyas. Some have hardly anything. So yeah, it's possible. But you can't make it a determination. You know? Because what's needed is going to happen. That's all. It'll take place. You know, it's like some people can surrender and let go much easier. Some people have a real mental struggle with it. Well, you can't figure out who's going to and who's not first. Everyone's different. Some people can come to a path and can really rapidly progress. So they don't have as much trouble letting go of nonsense and you know, but some people really struggle with it. Even though it's confining and it's bondage, they have such a difficult time letting go. Because, well, if I let go of this, then what? It's the unknown. At least I know what my suffering is, you know. That I'm familiar with, but the unknown. So yeah, everyone's different in this. But just try not to get too hung up on, well, our Kriya is going to happen or not happen. Really, for the one that the Kriyas are going through, to them it's really not all that disturbing. To other people watching it, they will be more disturbed than the one that's going through it. For them, it's just discharging. It's, you know, okay, spontaneous action that takes place. And actually you feel better sometimes after it's done. So. Heart chakra, is it synonymous with spirit? Forget about chakras. I'm trying to make it about areas. Chakras means trying to confine it to areas. Think of heart as openness. Okay? Want to open the heart chakra? Be open. Okay? Enter an attitude of love. It's more of an attitude. Okay? Rather than a place. If you want to work on developing the heart area, work on developing love and openness, transparency, giving without seeking. Okay. What does one do when the physical pain gets bad? Yeah, this is not an easy one. If you need medication, take medication. Okay. You need to have some sort of a comfort level. No, all medication is not bad. The body's a vehicle. Okay. We need to have the vehicle in some sort of a running order and be able to go through the path. So if you need medication, if you're really in extreme pain, take the medication. Or go get done what you need to have done in order for the vehicle to function. You know, if you had a car that needed a tune-up, you'd go down and get it a tune-up. So it functions better. And so, look at the body as a functioning vehicle for your path. It allows the consciousness to move and it allows things to, so that you have the five senses so you can, you know, experience life in this plane. But yeah. Sometimes if you are, once again, this is another thing where you don't want to be focusing on the pain. When you're focusing on the pain, you just increase it. If you go out and go for a walk or do another practice and you forget about it, miraculously the pain also subsides many times. Not always, but many times, yes. I know there have been instances where I've gone through and all of a sudden had an extremely horrid toothache. It was just so bad I couldn't. Oh. I went out and started walking, started paying attention to nature, started doing the breath, and next thing you know, no toothache. The minute I started looking for the toothache, it came back immediately. So yeah, if you put your attention somewhere else, it can also help to minimize it. If you forget about it, it can just fall away. But if the vehicle is really in a lot of disrepair, then yeah. If you need something for pain, take something. If I've got a raging headache, I'll take an aspirin, okay? There's no need to sit there and really suffer through it. Okay. It could be a jump-off point to start self-inquiry, too. Are you this body? Okay. Is the correct attitude to just trust Kundalini? Yeah, you don't want to fight with it. Okay. The more you can trust it and realize that really it's for your benefit in the end, that what it's doing is it's, you know, going through the system and unlocking what needs to be unlocked, and it's purging what needs to be purged, and it's connecting what needs to be connected. If you can recognize that it has some sort of an intelligence, that it knows what needs to be done in there, and you relax into it, it goes smoother, okay? It goes much smoother than if you're trying to manipulate it. So I think you find out that once you start doing this practice, when we have the Falun Dafa coming in as well, it's also going to help to keep it moving, you know, so it's not stagnating anywhere. So put the attention in the practice rather than trying to focus where the energy is stagnating in it and it's building up. Okay. Can you say some words on how to let go of self-importance? Just let go of it. Don't do that. Put your attention somewhere else. Quit thinking of it's all about me. Okay? Forget about yourself. Quit looking at the me. Let the mind still. Enjoy your cup of tea. Get in touch with the flower. Okay. Get involved in an action. And let go of the center. Identity. Forget about thinking, I'm doing this or I'm doing that or it's all about me, because it's not. If you keep this self-importance in place, then what happens? There's no connection with anything else. Put a wall up. Okay? Let the wall fall. Let it dissolve. And when there's no longer the me in place, then you become one with whatever it is you're looking at or interacting with. Okay. The self-importance is separation. Let go of the separation and find celebration. Okay. We're not going to separate. We're going to celebrate. Okay. In celebration and in laughter, where is self-importance? Okay, so celebrate and laugh, and you'll find that self-importance goes right out the door. Zen. History, stories, practices. Any of the Buddhist practices, whether Zen or others, come originally from whom? Siddhartha. Who was Siddhartha? Siddhartha was an Indian prince there was kept away from life in general, because the father had heard that he would either be a great king or he would renounce the world. So the father decided in his great wisdom that he would really keep him confined. You know, he would give him a palace, three different palaces depending on the season. And then in these palaces, he was not allowed to see any old people, no sick people, no nothing. Everything had to be fresh every day. He was not allowed to see illness, not allowed to see old, not allowed to have any of these things. So Siddhartha grew up and he got married, had a child. And about this time, there came a day where he went out. He wanted to see, started questioning, he wanted to see what was happening beyond the walls. And they went out. And the father again tried to get everything cleared out, you know, where he wouldn't encounter any of these things. But the universe being what it is, he encountered illness, death, old age. And because he'd been kept away from it for all those years, it came as such a force and impact with him. If you grow up with it, you become desensitized to it. But can you imagine never having seen this in your life? And all of a sudden it's there, point blank, and you see it the first time. So his father really unwittingly set him up for this journey quite well, because it really shook his foundations when he saw this. He immediately left the palace and started seeking. He'd go to this teacher and that teacher, and he's doing these asanas and meditations and great tapasya, which is austerities, and wasn't getting anywhere. He was starving himself. Okay. Then one day he saw this. Saw something, and he recognized that really the middle way is the best way. So at that point, he stopped doing so much of the austerities and started to question and started to continue, you know, with the meditation. And things fell away. He entered realization. And he started speaking of this with others. So he always spoke of the middle way. And at that time, he wanted to reform the Hinduism. Now, recognize, he was a Hindu. Okay? He was a Hindu. But when you come to realization, you see that this thing is caste system, and the dogmas, and all of that goes. So out of that grew Buddhism. Okay? He never said there's a God or there's no God. He said you have to go within and find out. You have to find out for yourself. Why? Because you can either say on both hands, it's true, you can either say God is all that exists, or there is no God. How can that be? Easily. Because for God to exist, there must be something other than, and there's not. There must be God and creation. But when you get to realization, you see that all creation comes out of this one force. It is not separate. For God to exist, there must be some separation. There is no separation. So at once you can say, yes, God is the only thing that exists, but God denotes creator, something separate. So you look at this and say, also you could say that there is no God as such, because it's not some vast thing that's sitting here and creating all of this other stuff. It's this one divine essence. And this divine essence is as much within each being as it is separate and distinct. So this is why Buddha said you have to find it for yourself. This can only be cognized when you go into realization, the vastness of it. Okay. So Siddhartha had some, of course, disciples, and they went through the known world at the time. And out of this sprung different modes, like the Tibetan practice got wrapped up with the bone or the shamanistic practices they had in place, so it became this Tibetan style of a Buddhism. In China, they had the Tao, they had Confucianism, so it changed a little bit there. And then when it went to Japan, it went into Zen, became Zen, which is more of the very simplistic practice of awareness. Okay. So that's how Zen had come into being. It's more of that simplistic, really, really, can we shut the doors? We've got the Mexican music over here. Yeah, we could all stand up and dance. Well, they really got that crank, don't they? So yeah, Zen is more of the, I like the Zen because it's more of the very basic, the very simple, you know, once again stripped bare of all of the dogmatic things that tend to creep in. As you saw in Tibetanism, the dogmatic things just really came back in strong again. In time, it grew more and more and more and more. Dogmatic things came into place. But originally, all Buddhism came out of Hinduism. Okay. Same realization, same absolute. It's just stripped bare. Stripped bare of the caste system, stripped bare of all of the other dogmatic things. Which is great. Okay. So that's why we're kind of going through a little metamorphosis here, because when I speak, and I speak really through Hinduism, it's the same thing. I don't speak, though, with caste system in place or any of the other dogmatic things. When you take it away, it doesn't matter what you call it, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, it's all the same. It comes down to that one truth that runs like a thread through all of it. Very simplistic path of going within, doing the meditation, opening up to what's here and now versus what the mind is coloring it to be. Okay? And find that divine essence. And when all this falls away, you'll find out. This is why they say there's nowhere to go, there's nothing to do. When you get to realization, that's true. There's no longer anywhere to go. There's no longer anything to do. It simply is, and you recognize it always been there. Okay? It's not something that's manufactured. It's not some other place outside of you need to get to. It's right here. Okay. So, within the tradition here, I hope to expand it to where we're doing the more of the Tao type and the Tai Chi, the Falun Dafa, this practice where the energy is moving. Within that tradition also, you're doing a lot of the meditation. Continue to do the satsang. Continue to make this more simplistic. Keep remembering, simple, simple, simple. Open, transparent, honesty. Okay. Not chasing something out there, but really get in touch with what's here. Instead of separate, let's celebrate, okay? Instead of gathering, collecting, confining, let's let go until it's open, transparent, and flowing. And this is why I call it the Zen way. Awareness in living, Zen way. Okay? This is our daily life. It's all an opening to the infinite. Every moment we have an opening, a chance to step into the infinite. And on that, we will close satsang for today. Take a break. Have some chai. It's time for tea. And who knows, if the music is still playing, maybe we'll have some, maybe we'll have some dancing. We may all get hungry for Mexican food. That keeps playing. So thank you for coming. I welcome you all with great love and respect. Thank you.